Welcome to The Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. The coffee is hot, the conversation lively, and we're talking real estate. I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P., bringing you news and information from the real estate world. So pull up that chair, get out the coffee and pen and pencil, and let's join in the fun. All right. Good morning, everyone out there. This is Cliff Perotti, your host, along with Lisa P., my co-host, here at the Property Beat on KEST 1450 AM. Good morning, Miss Lisa P.
Konnichiwa, Cliff.
Oh, my God. We're in trouble. We just got started.
I'm taking an international flair.
Are you? So are you thinking international for us?
I am, indeed.
Good
you never
for
know
you.
What's coming out of my mouth that's going to be.
Well, willkommen and bienvenue.
Your name, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So we have Carlos in the booth. Good morning, Carlos.
Buenos dias.
Ah!
You know,
that
there's some Spanish in there, you know.
I like the fact that he just piggybacks and stays in the game. So how's it going this morning?
Pretty good. A little tired, but I'm here.
A little tired, yeah. You said that you were coming back from L.A. Did you come back in the middle of the night? Or?
Yeah, I pretty much left in the evening and got here in the early morning. So,
so
I'm here.
If we turn and see you asleep, we know what happened. Okay.
Was that a road trip, like in a vehicle?
Yeah.
Oh,
jeez. Oh, man. All right. Well, welcome. I'm glad you're here, man.
Thank you.
So this week we have a special guest, William Ensley, Secretary General. I love that name. Secretary,
very official.
It does. Secretary General of the United States of America of the International for the USA of the International Real Estate Federation, aka FIOPSI. He's an expert in the world of international. I know he's got more titles. I want a long title like that.
You know, when I read his title, I thought that too.
I thought
Cliff needs more names at the end or more initials at the end of his name.
I have title envy. We'll have to talk to Bill about that. Okay, so he's an expert in the world of real estate internationally and the world of international real estate, pardon that pun. And we're hoping to get some insights on what the heck is going on out there. Should be fun.
So is he going to be touch base on the people that are coming from foreign countries to purchase here as well as us going out there?
I think you can ask him anything you want.
I just have to try to get it out of my mouth.
Yeah. Here, just have some more coffee, and that's great. So, folks, if you want to join in on the conversation, give us a call here at 415-431-8255. That's 431-TALK. And before we get going, so Lisa P., time to check in. What happened this week? How's it going? Anything exciting? What's happening in the world of real estate?
Well, it is always exciting in the world of real estate.
Uh-huh,
you know,
yeah.
We're always in our ups and downs and ups and downs. And I've often said that we real estate agents have got to enjoy the having that kind of manic depressive lifestyle because we're either up or we're down. We're up or we're down. And I think we like that. But what's going on? It's still busy out here.
Uh-huh.
Quite a few. Again, basically, if you're $1.5 million and under, you're getting a lot of activity.
Good.
I had an interesting. I was trying to do a CMA, market analysis on a property, and one of the comps came up at that it sold for $800,000. Or no, I'm sorry, it was listed for $800,000, but it sold for $1.4 million.
Oh, so it sold for almost 50% more than, actually almost double what it was listed for.
Yeah, exactly. And the agent who listed this property is very seasoned, and I'm just trying to understand, was that intentional? Not only is he seasoned, but in the remarks of the property, it said that it could possibly be split into two lots, which I'm sure that's exactly what happened.
So either he was really off on his market value.
I mean, wouldn't you, as an agent, wouldn't you have found out for sure if it could have been split, and then you do and put the price tag on it as opposed to...
Well, I think you're hitting on a different issue. I think that the real focus point of that kind of an experience is the question of, is it a good strategy to price low or just have all these crazy offer situations where people are having to bid some crazy number, or is it better to price more realistically where it's going to sell and then get fewer offers, but... I don't know. It's an interesting question.
Well, I have a question to the audience.
Uh-huh.
Does the agent look like he's great and knows what he's doing, or does he look like an idiot and doesn't know what he's doing? I mean, granted, you got the result you were looking for.
I don't know. What do you think, Carlos? You think is it better to get a 40 million offers on a property because you've underpriced it, or is it better to just get a couple?
He can't get. We're catching up. He's still asleep. He's trying to push his button so we can hear him.
Okay, folks, I would like you to call into the radio station
and give your opinion. Yeah, 431 talk. Okay, great. That's a good. That's a really good question. And you know, it's also different in. It's a different philosophy in different cultures in the world. So maybe Bill will chime in on that one.
Mm.
Okay. So, if you want to join us, how do people join in on the conversation?
Well, we would like them to give us a call at 415-431-8255. Again, that's 415-431-8255. Or they can also email us at questions@thepropertybeat.com.
And finally, in case you do miss a show and you want to still keep active with the conversation, you can visit us on our show archive on iTunes or at thepropertybeat.com website. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with some news stories for you.
Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat. So you may not know this, but we are sponsored by a local real estate company here in Northern California called Lyon & Foster International. The good folks at Lyon & Foster are an international luxury real estate company, helping home buyers and sellers as well as investors, whether they're buying or selling a home locally here in the Bay Area or abroad in a foreign country. So if you'd like some help or like to discuss those opportunities, please give the folks at Lyon & Foster a call. You can reach them toll-free at 855-367-4200. Again, 855-367-4200. Or you can email them at thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Again, that's thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com.
I just started talking. I realized I'm not on yet. Okay. All right. So this week in the news, you first. What do you got?
Okay. I'm ready. Let's see. This is my favorite story. You're making all these faces. It's really good. Just focus. Okay. Good old Goldie Hawn and her partner, Kurt Russell, have finally sold their house on Broad Beach in Malibu. It's been on the market for almost 2 years. Their original list price was $14 million.
Right.
And it's been on and off the market since. And while it's been on and off the market, they have been using it as a summer rental, and it's been renting for $80,000 to $95,000 a month.
Oh, my God.
I know. So I'm kind of thinking, at that price, do you really need to sell? But at the end of the day, they were patient, and they ended up getting a sales price of $9,950.
Okay.
And they're calling this Broad Beach. They're saying that the beach is disappearing.
So you pay how much for a house? How much people pay?
This is almost $10 million.
So you pay basically $10 million for a disappearing beach. Good job. Okay. Well, and imagine the with global warming, it could
Are they getting out of town first?
I'd get your pier in, and that way you have a beachfront property or with a boat. So I'll stay on the celebrity real estate genre and talk about Sheryl Crow's place. So Sheryl Crow has a little compound overlooking Hollywood. She's been on market. She came on the marketplace for $15.9 million, just under $16 million. And she's now cut the price. She cut it down by $2 million in January, now another million. So now she's on at $12.5 million. It's big 10 acres, but she still hasn't sold it yet. So she's Sheryl may be good at singing. She needs to get more aggressive in her pricing of her home.
So my next story involves, I don't know if you're going to recognize this name, Vince Camuto.
I don't know who that is.
He is a shoe designer.
Oh, of course. I Carlos Camuto, I know him. Yeah, right.
I so heard of that guy.
Yeah. I love him. Oh, he's got some really great shoes, and I have to admit, I'm a little bit of a fan. He and his wife just recently put their home on the market in New Jersey for $48 million. The property is called Woodland Manor, and it's a historic oceanfront estate in New York. And the house was originally designed for Ms. Woolworth, you know,
The Woolworth store chain?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's interesting.
Exactly. And she had hired, back in those days, I think it was in the 30s, she hired some high society architects to design her home, but she was rejected. She was not hoity-toity enough for them. So, yeah, she was rejected. So she had to go find another architect firm who would undertake her project.
Oh, okay. I'm going, who rejected her?
Yeah,
oh, the
architect. The architect.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right.
And probably some of the residences, too.
So that's your shoehorn into my next story, which is going to take us to Dallas.
All right.
With how was that for a pretty good slide? I'm watching the CBS Sunday Morning Show I love, and they started talking about a property that came on the marketplace, had to do some more research on it. And sure enough, the house, there's a bed and breakfast or a house that Lee Harvey Oswald stayed in Dallas that is now on the marketplace for $500,000. This was a house that he stayed in for all of, I want to say, 3 or 4 nights before he shot Kennedy.
Huh.
And the story was interesting because this is a house that they have kept in exactly the same condition since 1950, since that day, because
mm-hmm.
they treat it like a museum. People come in and tour the house, and but they're the family's just getting tired of it. This is now the daughter's been living there, and she's later in her 50s now, and her mom is long since gone, who was the original owner of the house. But she wants to sell it, but she wants to sell it to somebody to keep it as a museum, obviously historical significance. You know, one of the strangest parts about this story when I was listening to it was that after the shooting had occurred and they figured out who he was and where he had stayed, the FBI shows up at their house and they took everything that was in his little room. And it's a room that's no bigger. It was like a little sun porch area that he was sleeping in.
Mm-hmm.
They took everything in the room and they threw it on top of the sheets on the bed, you know, on the bed. Then they took all the sheets and the blanket and they just bundled it up and they walked out the door.
Wow.
Well, apparently the mother was upset for, she wanted money for the new sheets that she had just put on that bed, and she kept sending letters to the FBI going, I want my sheets back. And they said no. So if you're interested in buying a historical property in Dallas, there you go. That's our news story this week. You can, we're going to jump to the mailbag, so let's do it. Hang on. Time for that mellow mailbag time of the day. So here's the questions that you have submitted on our website. So Lisa, start us off.
This comment comes from Philip in Tiburon.
Uh-huh.
He submitted the following comment via our website, as you
okay.
said. He listened to our show last week from Stories on the Street.
Right.
And he goes to say that the real life show was better than fiction. In other words, our real stories were great and very helpful. So,
okay.
Thanks for sharing.
There you go. All right. And this came in from Juanita in Oakland. She says, I was hoping to hear the tree attorney last week. Oh, geez, that's a story. Will you have her on again? Well, we didn't have her on last week. She made a mistake in her calendar, but she has made good. She apologized profusely. She will be joining us next week. That's Bonaparte. Yeah, the tree attorney. So that's going to be interesting. Okay.
All right. We have a comment from Melanie from San Francisco. She said she's looking at buying a house with a vineyard. I was expecting to get the current grape crop as
uh-huh.
part of my purchase, but the seller says he's going to get the crop. Can he do this, and what should I do?
Oh, okay, that's a good question. What do you think? Is he entitled to the grapes for the crop that he's already been working on?
I would say that it's like everything in life, it is definitely negotiable.
It is, in fact, negotiable, but actually the general rule of thumb is if you're buying a farm, the crops from that season are called emblements, and they actually belong to the farmer who made them.
Okay, so if you have this really rockin' tomatoes plant, and they're just starting to ripen up, and
uh-huh.
they're going to be ready in September, but you've sold in August, you can go and pick your tomatoes?
Yeah, I don't know about that. If it's just a casual, it's if you actually make a product that is produced for revenue, so like a vineyard where you've got wine, grapes, and that kind of stuff. Unless if you're a tomato farmer, yeah, the answer would be yes to that. But
all those tomato fans, are you kidding? I think you're going to start seeing these new addendums.
All right, so there's your answer to that one. And let's see. So that's our mailbag for this week. If you'd like to be part of the conversation and have your question read live on the air, simply submit it to our website. There's a little button at the top of the page that says Questions for the Show. So if you'd like to be in there, just go ahead and submit it. We will be right back with our special guest, Bill Inslee, right after this.
Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat. So you may not know this, but we are sponsored by a local real estate company here in Northern California called Lyon & Foster International. The good folks at Lyon & Foster are an international luxury real estate company, helping home buyers and sellers as well as investors, whether they're buying or selling a home locally here in the Bay Area or abroad in a foreign country. So if you'd like some help or like to discuss those opportunities, please give the folks at Lyon & Foster a call. You can reach them toll-free at 855-367-4200. Again, 855-367-4200. Or you can email them at thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Again, that's thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com.
All right, welcome back. This week, our guest on the Property Beat is William Inslee, Secretary General of the International Real Estate Federation, U.S. Chapter. He has over 10 years' experience in developing international markets. He works with the Center for International Private Enterprise, CIPE, is I guess the initials for that, and the International Real Estate Property Foundation. He serves on the board of advisors of Eyeless Capital, a private equity firm placing international investments. And he's on the show with us today. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very, very good. It's summer.
It is summer.
Nothing to complain about.
So where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from D.C.
Ah, okay. So you're in the middle of your morning already. Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you sound way too chipper.
He does. He sounds good energy. I like it. All right.
So, Bill, as our listeners know, we'd like to ask them something unusual that they'd like to share with our listening audience, maybe something they've done unusually cool or something they're really proud of. And it does not have to be real estate related. So please, Bill,
give us something
to share.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, well, you know, my degree, I went to school for theater. Theater and communications. So my degree is actually in theater and communications. And so when I got out of school, I was in the theater. That doesn't pay much money. So I had to get a real job. But I've kept up with the theater. And so I'm actually the webmaster for a stage combat website. And so it's called actionquarterly.com. And so it's one of the skills or one of the fight choreographers or violence designers don't kind of get the their moment in the spotlight. I mean, if you go see a play and there's a smack or a sword fight or a gunshot, there are specialists that work in that area. And so this is really dedicated to them and kind of dedicated to promoting the art of stage combat and stage violence.
Wow.
Wow.
I know, that was like... Dude, you stumped the chumps here. That was
interesting, huh?
Yeah, I want to come to D.C. So if we go to D.C. and go see a play, will we find you in action?
If it has a fight, you know, if it's a domestic slap or a fight or things like that, or definitely if it has sword play, gunshots, anything that has to do with physical, you know, because the actors have to repeat that in some instances, you know, 8-10 times a week. So for their safety, you know, there's an entire genre and field of people that try to make sure that is done done well, done believably, but also done safely.
Wow. Well, okay, so folks, if you would like to get in on the conversation
as
we talk about getting slapped around on stage, you can call in at 431-TALK. That's 415-431-8255. So, Bill, give our listening audience an idea of what you do on a daily basis in the world of international real estate.
Well, I'm the chief staff person, secretary general, as it's called, of the International Real Estate Federation. So work there. I also this summer have interns at Johns Hopkins and Georgetown that are doing research on developing markets. So we are working on basically the rules, the laws, property rights, access to credit, you know, lots of different factors that go into a real estate transaction are certainly not the same in many of the developing countries in the world. However, the capital is moving around, and so the idea is to provide an investor or people who are investing an idea of what the laws are, what the situation is, particularly in developing economies, because those are really where the opportunities are. Mm-hmm. And then for FEOBSE, we work, I'm this chief staff person. There are 48 other chapters around the world. So I try to facilitate relationships and interactions with those other chapters. So in FEOBSE, we do a lot of congresses, meetings, networking, and basically hooking folks up who are looking to do cross-border transactions.
Well, now, so these this information that you gather, where can the general public get access to this?
We are working on, yes. You had mentioned the Center for International Private Enterprise. They are the sponsor of this this project, and we've been working on it now for 3 years. And so that's what the interns are doing.
Uh-huh.
They are actually uploading all of this information to a dedicated website. And so that'll be PropertyScorecards.com, and it's not up yet. That's what they're doing. We're doing this. We've got about 20 countries that are done, and so they are working on that this summer. So by the fall, we'll have a dedicated website where people can go and find out very specific information about the property rights in a country. One of the things that people don't think about is property rights are one thing, but dispute resolution is another. And a lot, what happens if the deal goes wrong?
Mm.
What do you do? And, in many, many countries, the court system is the most corrupt thing in the country.
Mm.
Or maybe it's just the situation where it may take you 3 years to get through a dispute and cost you a huge amount of money.
Wow.
So these are the kinds of things that when you're working internationally, it's really critical that you know and that you can provide to your clients, because a lot of times people are just not as aware that this is the world is just a very, very, very different place, particularly when it comes to property.
Well, in fact, you're really bringing up an interesting question. When someone's considering investing internationally, there are really risks that go beyond just the property.
Absolutely.
And how do you – are you seeing capital flowing more into the United States or out of the United States into these opportunity areas?
Oh, at this point, it's been really flowing into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you've been following, when I'm lecturing at Georgetown, we talked about the BRICS, and so that was the Brazil, Russia, India, and China.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of capital flew out of the U.S. to those countries. Well, now it's all coming back. And so that's the flow at this moment in time.
Okay.
It is really moving toward the U.S. But then if you're an opportunistic investor or a cowboy, then a lot of people, of course, have an investment strategy that goes opposite of that trend. So there are a lot of people who are thinking, hey, wait a minute, if it's all going this way, then there's got to be opportunities the other way.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right. So you mentioned FEOPC, which is the International Real Estate Federation. By the way, all right, I'm going to ask, what does FEOPC stand for? You got to tell us.
Yes, well, that is a French acronym, so it's Fédération Immobilière. It's a French acronym, so it's the International Real Estate Federation. It's just in French.
You can't get through. You can't get through, can you?
No. I would butcher it, so it's better.
There it is.
Since I'm Secretary General, I better not mispronounce the.
So FEOPC recently they were in Taiwan or something, right? They had some kind of a world congress?
Yeah, FEOPC was founded in the first World Congress was in 1948, and it was really after World War II. The whole idea of the organization was to integrate the European and the U.S. markets economically so that there would, as a strategy, to kind of avoid conflict in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So the 64th World Congress was held in Taiwan in May. And it was in Taichung, Taiwan,
mm-hmm.
which is the third largest city in Taiwan. Really, really great conference. Again, kind of emerging market, somebody who really wants to, get their face, get people to understand who they are.
Mm-hmm. And what do they do? First of all, who comes to these conferences?
We have, FEOPC has brokers, property managers, appraisers, developers. I mean, in Asia in particular, it's largely developers because there's so much development going on.
Mm-hmm.
So a year ago, we were in St. Petersburg, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, we have had between 800 and 1,000 real estate professionals, usually from about 40 or 50 different countries. So the key is that you're able to interact, meet, and all of these kind of folks in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
So it would save you quite a bit of world travel to go to that. So, in Taiwan, the focus was on sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
If you know anything about Taiwan in the 70s and 80s, during the development, it was all this concrete jungle. They just put up all this crazy, pave over everything, build.
Mm-hmm.
And then, they ended up with what today is being very progressive of going back and saying, wait a minute, we need to make this stuff sustainable. So they have lots of ordinances in the city of Taichung, for instance, that require if you're knocking down a building and you're putting up a construction fence, you're required to have green vines growing on that construction fence.
Oh, that's nice.
There are lots of incentives to put in trees and rooftop gardens and things like that, which bring down the temperature, which take care of pollution. So that was really very, very exciting. And the Japanese architect Ito was the keynote speaker,
mm-hmm.
and really very interesting, talking about how all around the world skyscrapers are based on the Chicago School,
mm-hmm.
that grid and glass facade,
uh-huh.
which is not necessarily the best way. And so his architecture is based on nature. So like one of the buildings has a central column that's shaped like trees. So it's got these randomly placed, they're actually spirally placed columns, which are more like trees that go through the building that are open, that let in the light.
Wow.
He's doing the Opera House in Taichung, and it's based on bone, you know, the density of bone and how bone has little pockets in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really fascinating. So at the World Congress, you're not only able to meet international real estate practitioners, but you're also able to kind of get the latest on real estate development and ideas.
So then do they have sessions where people can go in and get educated on these various aspects?
Absolutely, yeah. There are keynote sessions, which Ito was the keynote session,
uh-huh.
and then they have panel sessions where people kind of make presentations about their country or what they're doing or the projects that they do. Senior housing was another one of the really interesting topics about how people around the world handle senior housing. You know, it's very different. Some folks, for instance, in Asia, they're just now starting to emerge as having such a thing as senior housing, because most people would take care of their family. You know, the seniors would live within the family, and so that's a new, relatively new kind of concept in some places. Whereas some places, it's been like the U.S. It's various levels of senior care.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, that is actually that's a whole cultural change. Because you think of that culture where it's like they take care of their generations of family and they're all kind of living close to each other, if not with each other, and suddenly now you have the parents now being shuffled off to the senior housing, their grandparents. That's interesting. Culturally, that's got to be a challenge.
And that's one of the lessons about international, that there are a lot of things that we do here in the U.S. that will eventually kind of go overseas. I always tell the students that, generally Europe and some of the, again, in the real estate world, some of the things that we're doing in the U.S., we're maybe 10 years ahead of them. And then if you go to Southeast Asia or in other places, you're 20 years ahead. So you don't necessarily need to learn new skills. You can just learn how to export those skills. We had a lecturer one time at Georgetown that talked about the outlet mall.
Uh-huh.
And he was one of the people who exported that idea to Europe, and everybody thought he was crazy. It's like, what are you talking about? Why would somebody in France go to an outlet mall to buy something when they could go directly to the store? And he's like, well, because it's cheaper. Hello.
Yeah.
So he made millions and millions exporting that idea. He didn't invent that idea. He just exported it and kind of, again, it took him 3 or 4 years to get the business established.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the idea. Another one was data centers. A lot of, again, ideas that we have in the U.S. in a real estate world. And so that's what he did the next time. He went, after he sold the business that was doing the outlet malls and started doing data centers in Europe and, as an investment thing. Because once you get a tenant in a data center, that tenant isn't ever going to leave.
So it's really, it's a very simple concept, looking at what's working here and then exporting that to a country where you just, their lifestyles would love that, they just don't know about it yet.
They just don't know about it yet, exactly.
Yeah. Wow, that's a pretty good idea. All right, folks, we're going to pause for a quick break. We're going to be right back. And we're back at the Property Beat here with Bill Ensley, Secretary General of the U.S. version, U.S. chapter, if you will, of the International Real Estate Federation. You can join in our conversation at 431-8255. It's funny, Bill, I got to tell you, Lisa P's here.
I'm about ready to take.
She was like, she had this puzzled expression on her face. I went, what?
Okay, so I'm thinking outlet malls. Outlet malls in Europe. So is somebody putting together tours like we're going to start in France and then we're going to go to Italy and we're going to go to the outlet?
Oh, my God. That's actually a pretty funny idea.
Oh, my God. It'd be a blast. You get on the little bus.
People go on cooking tours. Why not go on shopping tours?
I suspect it's being done, right, Bill?
I would think so. Yeah, that's the kind of thing. But no, maybe that's the next idea.
I don't know, guys. So here's the thing. Here's the challenge that I have with the outlet mall thing. It doesn't matter where you go. It's the same damn stores.
Mm-hmm.
Some people in this room feel that the quality is different out the outlet versus if you go into the fancy store.
Well, the interesting thing about this particular, what he learned is that he had to raise the level of the experience.
Oh,
and that eventually ended up coming back to the United States. Because generally a lot of these outlet malls are just, in the middle of, parking lots, they're concrete shells, there was no amenities. And he realized in order to make it work in Europe, he had to add the amenities, so fake streets, water, fountains and that kind of thing. And some of that has started to come back, where in the competition for the outlet malls, it's like, okay, like Cliff said, do we want yet another concrete, strip of, Fendi's and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
So he started to add amenities to get people. Another thing, and I've seen this in the U.S. too, is, places for the kids to hang out. Those are the kinds of things. So it was really interesting, the story he had to go through to make it work.
Yeah. Well, you are so charming, and I look forward to meeting you live in person. So you guys have an event coming up in November here in San Francisco?
Yes, the U.S. So we talked about in Taiwan, that's the World Congress.
Right.
Then the U.S. chapter, FIOPSI USA, has their meetings twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be in San Francisco November 5th through the 7th. We're going to be at the Intercontinental San Francisco near Union Square, and so we'll be having our version of the Congress. So, and we're focusing on sustainability this time, so we'll be having speakers talking about sustainability from a development point of view. Our developers, really looking at that from the experts, the appraisers and the brokers, are people willing to pay for green technology and those things, and then also the property managers talking about water use, electricity use, and those kinds of things. We have a speaker lined up from Ukraine who's going to be coming in and talking about situation in Ukraine. We'll also be having a speaker from the U.S. State Department. The U.S. State Department is one of the largest real estate holders in the world. And on the international level, they don't get to decide whether or not there's going to be real estate. They have to have it. So all of the embassies and then all of the staff housing owned by the U.S. Diplomatic Corps, so we'll be able to hear about, the opportunities and what goes on there, which is, I think a lot of people, once you think about it, you're like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. There's that kind of thing, but it's really fascinating. So we'll have a speaker, 6 to 12, four sessions during the day. We'll also be having our Grand Prix of Real Estate, which is our real estate prize. We'll call it the Oscar of Real Estate for the best U.S. developments, and we're going to be at the South Beach Yacht Club for that Grand Prix gala.
How does one get an invitation?
It's FIOPSI members, but it's also FIOPSI-USA.com is the website. Anybody can come who's interested in learning more about real estate. That's also right before the NAR convention, which will be at Moscone. So we will also have a booth at the trade show and expo.
Mm-hmm.
So, people are welcome to come to our meetings or check us out in the expo at the NAR at the convention center.
I think what she was asking is, don't you have press passes for, radio show hosts and that sort of thing?
It might be possible. You should talk to the Secretary General.
Exactly. And then maybe I want to take that Secretary General to some of the
outlet malls.
Yes, and you can tell some of them here locally what they are doing wrong.
That's very exciting. Yeah, it's really, that is what our core mission has been really since the beginning, is to really talk about international, promote international, and anybody who's interested, at least give them a taste. And mm-hmm. so that's it'll be very, very exciting for the folks in Southern California and anybody who happens to be coming, to the NAR show. To really get that, NAR was one of the founding members back in the 50s, and so it's mm-hmm. it's been a long history of. I think people probably aren't aware that this has been going on for quite some time, as far as really making sure. And that's one of the things you guys are talking about is, when we were talking about those dangers of property rights or those are kind of things. Well, the key is really to find a professional that understands your market, your ethics, but also understands the other market and can be your advisor. And so that's really the main thing that FIOPSI does.
Well, you know, I'm just teasing you because I have to tell you that FEOPSI International actually gave us press passes to go to Taiwan. We just were not able to do it. We had a conflict. Lisa P's going.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, we had a conflict because you were going on vacation and everything else. But good. All right.
Next time, please send those passes to me. She's on an airplane.
I'm telling you, she's on an airplane and gone. See ya.
Yeah, exactly. So do you deal basically with B2B or B2C? In other words, do you interact?
It's largely business to business.
Is it? Okay.
Generally, you're going to have, you know, that's the kind of thing. For instance, we're doing a trade mission to Vietnam in August. We're taking members, a lot from Seattle and some from San Francisco, who are going to go to Vietnam to try to ascertain the situation there. Vietnam is one of those countries that's on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the, I think you may have had stuff on the website, Philippines, Vietnam, those are the kind of places that are just starting to get their political situation under control, get their markets a little bit more transparent. And so the idea is to go over there, and you're really taking broker to broker or developer to developer to really understand those markets so that when you go back home, you're able to service your clients with a knowledge base. Vietnam is really one of the interesting things that's going on right now, and this is the advice that I'm giving a lot of folks is, you know, it's in distressed assets, and this is, you know, for investors, you know, institutional investors or people who are investing, you know, there are a lot of complications from going into a country and purchasing land or getting permits to build something new or all of those kinds of things. They're just complications and what we call extra legal payments, which you might not want to be involved with.
Mm-hmm.
However, you can go to these places and get distressed assets. Because these are assets, I mean, again, it takes a good level of analysis. We're back to the outlet mall or shopping mall kind of situation where you can go in and get that kind of asset, turn it around, and make a profit.
So if you're a turnaround guy, this is you think it might be an interesting opportunity.
Exactly. There are lots of those. That's where we are right now just because of the worldwide recession, and those are the kind of things. So internationally, if you're talking about large-scale investment, and then it's really being the turnaround guy, there's lots of that stuff going on. And then on the residential side, you know, a lot of folks, we did a trade mission to Panama earlier in the year. There's a lot of great stuff still available in Panama, but places like Nicaragua are starting to come online, starting to be safer, you know, starting to kind of attract that second home and retirement community. So it's an exciting world. I mean, it really is an exciting world, and it does really get smaller every day.
Now, what was that? What was that legal fee? What did you call it?
Extra legal payments.
Extra legal payments.
Yeah, what does that involve exactly? If you can talk about it.
Well, it's just generally under the money.
Under the table money.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
That kind of stuff.
We call it get-it-done money.
it's the kind of situation where just to get permits, there are lots of things where things aren't as transparent. You know, mm-hmm. One of the things we always talk about is we talk about how horrible it is that this kind of thing occurs overseas, but we all know that this kind of thing sometimes occurs right here at home.
Well, and not only that, if that's the way that business is done, it's like, well, we can bring all of our methodologies in the world that we want, but it ain't going to get anything done if we don't follow their protocols and their methodologies of doing business.
And it's a situation where you just kind of have to introduce what we do and the situation of, you know, a lot of people I've heard it called, you know, it's like water in the toilet. Once you start it, just you're going to go down that toilet if you even start on that path.
I just want to know what's my cushion on that kind of a thing? You know, how much extra cash would I have to be thinking about that?
There are opportunity costs for anything like that. One of the things I talk about, for instance, if an investment, and this is, you know, on the larger investment kind of thing, but if you're talking about a return on investment in Europe, you know, you may be lucky to get 4% return.
Wow.
You know, if you're talking about the U.S., you know, everybody's happy with 8 or 10%
mm-hmm.
return.
Yeah.
If you go to someplace, let's just say Kenya or Ghana, you can get a 30% return.
Hmm.
But you're going to have to subtract out of that maybe security costs. So you may have to subtract 10 or 15% out of that 30% return.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? You still end up with 15% return,
mm-hmm.
which
wow.
is a lot higher than you're going to get in the U.S. or Europe. Again, you got to be a cowboy. You got to be, it's a standard economic rule, more risk, more reward.
Sure.
Okay. We just got an email question from a listener in San Francisco, and they are asking, is now a good time to buy property in the Philippines?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. The Philippines is on the way up.
Mm-hmm.
The Philippines has really cleared a lot of hurdles. Their government has really focused on concentrating on what we were talking about earlier, which is corruption and transparency,
mm-hmm.
and really kind of harmonizing their laws. We did a project in the Philippines, and one of the problems in the Philippines was there are conflicting property rights laws. So they're, you know, they have, I think it's something like 60 different laws on the books dealing with property rights and those kinds of things in different agencies. So they've started to consolidate that and really move in the direction of clarifying that. So yes, Philippines is one of the ones that's on the way up. You know, Vietnam is kind of behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Indonesia, that whole area of Southeast Asia is really a really opportune time to kind of get in. The other place we're talking about is like Colombia. Colombia is on the way up. Turkey, you know, I'd mentioned before the BRICS, B-R-I-C-S. The newest terminology is called CIVETS, C-I-V-E-T-S, which is like Colombia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Egypt, Turkey, South Africa. You really, if you look at it from an economic point of view, these are places with an emerging middle class, relative political stability. So those markets and that property whole market is going to kind of be going up. I always talk about the wave. You know, you want to anticipate the wave. If you're going to, you know,
right.
surf, you know, you guys are in California, the surf, if you're going to surf, you have to anticipate the wave and be on it before it breaks. And most people kind of jump in too late,
mm-hmm.
and the prices are already on their way up, mm-hmm. and those are the kinds of things. So that's kind of a very, very broad overview, but it's, you know, again, it depends on your specific interest, time return, risk acceptance.
Now, you touched on something right there that we've talked about before on the show when we talked about some of the markets in the United States and when investors typically go into a market. And for example, in Phoenix, where you know I'm at a conference listening to what's going on in the kind of the institutional side of things, and the institutional investors have bought in Phoenix, they've sold in Phoenix, and they're moving on to Atlanta, for example. But by the time the normal consumer hears about what's going on, they're suddenly starting to buy in Phoenix now.
Yep.
But they're on the back side of the wave. The
Absolutely.
Their good money's been done. And so I suspect unless you as a consumer really have a penchant for this and you really have somebody that you're working with to help keep looking forward, you're always going to be trailing, because by the time you read about it in the news, it's too late.
Yeah, definitely. And the idea is to really think about the movement, you know, so think about if it's happening, you know, here, what's the next tier city?
Mm.
And, you know, this is something very interesting that we found as well with the Miamis and the New Yorks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of, you know, South American money has been flowing into Miami. Huge amounts of Russian money is coming into New York. Well, these guys are coming over expecting a bargain. Because they're like, oh, well, yeah, the economy's down, but, you know, that there aren't bargains anymore. And, you know, so that's the same kind of thing, is there are international investors who are burned by the same thing. They waited too long. You know, they thought, oh, well, and then they go, wait a minute, I'm not buying that. The good news about that is then they can go to the second-tier cities. They're going, well, I'm not paying that. I'm going to go. And then they start to circle out. So what we're seeing now, and this has been a crazy year. I
mm-hmm.
think you guys have probably talked about this before, but I mean, you know, right after the first of the year, everything just went boom. And you know, again, in New York and Florida, and now it's starting, like you said, Phoenix, you know, all this stuff is starting to move out. Because I think, you know, another one of the economic lessons is, you know, demand doesn't ever go away. It just gets pent up. And so now, of course, I think people are starting to talk about, wait a minute, I heard you guys talking about, wait a minute, 850 list and it's selling for 1.3? This doesn't sound right. Something must not be right here. And so I'll answer that question, yes, something is not right there.
Right.
Something is either wrong with the lister or wrong
mm-hmm.
with the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, are you guys up and tuned? Are you a source for kind of legislative things that are going on in a country? And I'm thinking in mind specifically, we reported on the change in Hong Kong and relative to the Hong Kong government is trying to put some pressures on caps to artificially subdue the race that was happening with property values. Do you guys act as a source for international investors for that kind of information?
Absolutely. We do that. We kind of go from day one to the other end. FEOPSI is a member of the United Nations ECOSOC, which is the Economic and Social Council. So we look at from the very beginning of where the property rights are, those are the kind of things, all the way to the other end about advice for investors on tax issues. You know, there have been a lot of, FERPTA here and the penalties for foreign investors in the U.S. The other side of it is, and that's one of the things we talk about when I'm working with the master's students, is, you have to think about getting your money out. Mm-hmm. So if you get the profit out, what are the taxes on that? Mm-hmm. And those are the kinds of things of, the divestment and getting out of that deal. So, yes, you've made, and in some countries, they'll give you a 20, 30, 40% penalty on taking that money out of the country.
Right.
So, oh, great, as I was mentioning earlier, we made a 30% profit, but we can't take it out of the country without penalties. So those are the things we watch. We're trying to really, technology is trying, we're trying to get to the point where we can get that information in a more readily available form. But right now, the safest thing is to really contact a FEOPSI member in that other country, because they're going to be able to fill you in on what the laws are and what the changes are as far as those kinds of things go.
So are your members screened then?
Yes. The FEOPSI, each here in the United States, like the National Association of Realtors, the Appraisal Institute, the Institute of Real Estate Management, you have to be a member of one of those in order to become a member of FEOPSI. If you're not, you need to be recommended by a current member. So in the other countries, it's the same thing. There is a professional association which has a code of ethics, and so that member has gone through the whatever that process of that organization is, and so therefore we have some assurances that they have, that they have a code of ethics and are on the up and up.
Mm-hmm. Well, based upon your experience right now and kind of the research that you're seeing, what's your overall, if you had to kind of just say, okay, overall globally in real estate, here's what's going on?
Well, overall right now, the money's coming to the U.S.
Okay.
I mean, the people are looking for a safe place to park their money.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, people are parking a lot of money here. I've gone to conferences. Again, the idea, if you're a real estate professional, is if you can make that relationship with that person who's parking that money here, eventually that money is going to go back overseas. It's not going to stay here. So the largest kind of, and parking money is on a big institutional investor. We just had our Florida Council just did a trade show in China. And people still want to come to the United States because they want to be citizens.
Right.
I mean, there's still a large amount of money, particularly coming from China and places where, as real estate people, we want it to all be about real estate. But people are still coming here because, either their kids are in school or they're looking for a path to actually, be a citizen in the U.S. So that's really the large kind of thing. But that's been going on now for a while, so I'm starting to get a little itchy saying that, because I think we're going to turn. I think that's going to turn. Some people are going to give it another 2 or 3 years just because, and this is another thing I talk about as well, is because the Europeans can't get it together.
Right.
I mean, that's really, it's not necessarily that we've done everything right. It's that we haven't done it as bad as the Europeans right now, because you've got this Middle East money, because the money in the Middle East had traditionally been going to Europe because it's closer. But now all that money is skipping, not all of it, but a lot of it is starting to skip over Europe and come to the U.S. because they're like, well, what's going on? You guys haven't got that together. So that's another big story. We've got, in working with the equity fund, we're looking at, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, those folks who have a different motivation. That's really portfolio diversification. It's a different kind of motivation because they've got so much money in oil or those kinds of things. And so their advisors are saying, now, wait a minute, you need to diversify these monies because, the oil game can't last forever.
Okay.
We'd like to remind our listeners, if you have questions to ask international real estate specialist Bill Ensley, you can simply call us at 415-431-8255, and we'll be right back after a quick break.
Well, that was a quick break. All right, so Bill, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, good, okay.
Yeah, Carlos was in the phone. He was on the phone. He was doing something. He looked out and he goes, what are you talking about?
That was our code of silence.
That was our code of silence, yes. Okay, so we're
Moment
back.
Then, let's call it that.
Yeah.
Okay, so We recently reported on some slowdowns in China happening, which on the West Coast, that's a bit, we watch that because there's money coming in and out of there all the time, obviously.
Yeah.
What do you think is causing that slowdown in the Chinese market?
Well, the government.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's the same thing in Vietnam, and those are the kinds of things. They can open or close the spigot at any time they want. And so that's really the kind of situation. And, I mean, it's you know, the same. Again, we kind of think, oh, wow, that's so different than us. But, you know, the Federal Reserve, you know, so they're looking at trying to keep a handle on, you know, and again, this is on the real estate side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're talking about the overall growth, you know, that they're not growing in an economic, you know, the entirety of the economy as fast as they had in the past. I you know, I don't have specific information, but what you're looking at is they're not the only game in town anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I think, putting this into the context of what we were talking about earlier, there was a time when, you know, it was the Chinese were the only people, being manufacturers, the only people sending money to the U.S., you know, again, not only, but the majority of buying the bonds and that kind of thing. And now, really, and I say this, you know, quite frequently, is that, you know, this is a multipolar world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are so used to there being such a thing as a superpower. But that really is no longer going to be the case. You know, everybody says, oh, it used to be, you know, Britain, Russia, U.S., whatever. Well, it's really a multipolar world. So I think the Chinese are suffering a little bit from the fact that, you know, they're no longer the only game in town. And there's lots of competition. There's lots of, you know, another thing that was happening was, you know, the rare earths and the minerals and people going into Africa and places like that. So I think that the Chinese are just, you know, we're looking at, as the rest of the world starts to recover and mm-hmm. wake up, there's more competition just generally economically. So that means that they're not going to have the 10-12% returns that they've had before. They're going to have a little bit less because there's more players in the game.
You know, it's you mentioned that, you know, there's more money coming into the United States perhaps right now than there is going out, and and you hear the phrase parking. I've heard that before, where it's almost like just parking capital in a garage someplace until it kind of calms down. Is that an indication that there's a greater, if you will, an instability perhaps? Is it pursuing a return rate that they can get better here theoretically, or is it really just stability? Are they just looking?
It's absolutely stability.
Okay.
It's a different, from what I can see, it's a different stability than, again, it goes back to the context of the world has so completely changed. A lot of it has to do with technology, you know, the social media and the information and those kinds of things. I mean, if you look at Japan, what's happening in Japan politically, look at Egypt and Turkey and all of those things. So I think it's more parking, you know, it's kind of like a rest stop rather than parking mm-hmm. to, you know, to store and keep. It's like, okay, let's just stop for a minute
right.
until all this gets sorted out. So that's what I see is happening right now, as people are, you know, let's just put this here. I think the reality is it's a 3 to 5 year parking to try to hope that things sort themselves out. And that's what really excites me about being in the business right now is we have, as real estate professionals, whether we have international experience or not, we generally have a more sophisticated market, more different tools, all those kinds of things. So we really, I think, have a responsibility to kind of step up and sort out this international real estate world and figure out what's going on, because that indicator to me is, you know, we don't want our Ferrari parked in the garage for too long. We
yeah.
want to get it back out on the road. And I think that's exactly what I'm encouraging. As I say, I have master's students at Georgetown's and Johns Hopkins, or, you know, anybody in the real estate game who really, you know, is looking to what the future is all about. It's all about figuring out what to do in this situation where there is no certainty and, you know, we don't know. And as I said, I specialize in developing economies. And
mm-hmm.
so really, to me, I always talk about a general rule, because people like, you know, to be very simple. And to me, it's south of the equator. You know, south of the equator is where the future is.
Okay, I want to hit on something, and I don't mean to interrupt you, because
yeah.
I'm suddenly, you know, it's what dawned on me. There's a lot of real estate companies that are we see in the local markets, like I won't mention any specific names, but they use the word international in their name a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, all they are is really nothing more than franchises with offices in various countries. But there's no real connection between Because it seems to me, if I'm sitting here and I'm a seller of a house or a shopping center or something, and I want to get my property exposed to some of this international money to see if I can't, you know, get the right buyer for my property, how do I go about doing that?
And that's really the key, FEOPSI and the international. I mean, right now, particularly in international, it's about relationships. This is nothing new. I mean, there just is very, very little chance that somebody is going to see your listing in another country and take a hit on it. They need to know a person and see a face. And that, you know, we're moving away from that perhaps, but right now, in Europe, it's the same kind of thing. You would never see lots of people with business cards and flyers doing properties. It's about who you know and developing that relationship of trust. And so that's really where the International Real Estate Federation comes in, because you can start to develop that trust. At the NAR show in San Francisco and the FEOPSI meetings, we generally will have, I know NAR generally has over 1,000 real estate professionals who come in for that conference. We'll have several of those. So it's really about developing that relationship, and, you know, the listing services, all of that stuff is supplemental, but it's not going to replace the relationship building.
Right. At the end of the day, it's still people to people, right?
Yep.
Good. So if our listeners would like to talk to you and get more information about international real estate and be able to contact you, which is the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can do an email. It's Bill, B-I-L-L, mm-hmm. at FEOPSI-USA.com. That's F as in Frank, I, A, B as in boy, C-I-USA.com.
Okay.
Great.
That's great.
Well, we would like to thank our listening audience for tuning in today. Wow, that just flew by.
It did, Bill, and we'll be seeing you in November for sure.
Excellent.
There you go. And thank you to our special guest, Secretary General of the International Real Estate Federation here in the U.S., Bill Ensley. And thank you, co-host Ms. Lisa P., for a great show. So thanks, both you guys, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Carlos, take us out of here.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's show. Thanks for joining us here at The Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. We hope you've enjoyed this week's show and encourage you to come back next week when we've got yet another lively guest and more real estate conversation. If you'd like to check us out on the web, you can find us at thepropertybeat.com. For now, I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P., saying, that's a wrap. See you next time on The Property Beat.